election. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. It's a good thing that Saddam was captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction? The middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. That special theme music means that today is Tuesday, Election Tuesday, as we call it here on the Inside Scoop, where we talk about some of the issues, as many as we can, that will decide the election of 2004. And every Tuesday on Election Tuesday, I like to invite someone from a different point of view, from a different perspective, from a different party, to come on and debate with me on air some of these issues that will decide the election. And one of my more frequent guests today is Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of the Utah branch of the College Republicans, and he has graciously agreed to come on this Tuesday, and I think we'll hear from him a number of other Tuesdays. And I guess one of the things I take great pleasure in is that I don't believe in torture, but I think I may torture Tom just a little bit by making him listen to that special Tuesday theme music before I begin the show every day. So despite that torture, I want to welcome you to the show, Tom.
Oh, don't worry. That music keeps me motivated. Don't you worry about it.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good, because it keeps me motivated, too. So we both agree that we like the music. That's terrific. We got a number of things that we want to talk about today. Some of the things Tom has chosen, some I have chosen. And I'll give you folks the full gamut. And at the end of the day, it's up to you to decide what issues you want to talk about. The two issues that Tom chose for today is one on Social Security. In fact, if you look on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com, you can see a piece that Tom wrote on Social Security and why he's sounds like he's opposed to the system, but we'll get to the specifics of how he feels about Social Security right after I finish the intro. The other issue that Tom brought out, he wanted to discuss with, is the allegation that Sandy Berger took some documents out of the National Archives when he was studying up to answer the 9/11 Commission. Some of the topics I want to talk about are why Bush refuses to talk to the NAACP, and in that regard, how Congresswoman Corinne Brown of Florida was censored, I should say, by the House of Representatives when she said that the Republicans stole the election. We're going to play a clip from that. Also, the comment between the exchange between Helen Thomas and Scott McClellan. Helen Thomas, of course, is a veteran reporter. In fact, I think she's in her 80s. She's been around forever. I think she's a terrific reporter. Her exchange with Scott McClellan, Bush press secretary, on whether George Bush is going to take personal responsibility for getting us into war based on falsehoods. And then there are a number of other topics we can discuss depending on your interest. We can talk about the military contractors, CACI, that were involved in what I call torture in Iraq. I don't know what else you call strapping electrodes to private body parts of people. But how they're still getting contracts by the Bush administration. You would think that the torture would disqualify them. We can talk about the Republicans squabbling on the budget. It seems the Republicans can't agree among themselves whether they want higher spending or lower taxes. They seem to want both and not pay the deficit back. So there's a lot to talk about, and as always, you are part of the debate. All you have to do is call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free call. You have no excuse not to call in and to challenge either myself or Tom or both of us about our views. 877-57-SCOOP, or if you prefer the email route, you can send an email to comment at RadioInsideScoop.com. And one last way of getting in touch with us is to add a comment to the blog at www.RadioInsideScoop.com. We're going to read a lot of those comments as we go through the program. So, Tom, let's start with one of your topics that you wrote this whole long piece about on the blog, and that is Social Security. I'll let you take it away and then let the debate begin. Go ahead. What are your feelings on Social Security?
Well, I think, Mark, is that, you know, when we talked last Tuesday, we came to the conclusion when talking about Enron is that when people are involved in pension scams, they need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, whether that's Enron or Tyco or other corporate scandals that have happened in the last decade or so. Or especially what disturbs me is millions, and you corrected me last Tuesday, it was hundreds of millions of money has been literally lost and scammed away through Enron pension scams. And that has affected thousands of people. What disturbs me, that's an important issue, but I think the big hot potato for my generation, and even yours, is the pension scam being pitched to my generation and your generation as Social Security.
Well, let's talk about Social Security. Let's talk about the history of Social Security, and I want to know where you have a problem with it and whether you think we should just end it. I'm not sure where you're going with that. But let's talk about how Social Security began. I think you and I agree on the facts, but let's talk about it. Social Security began in the 1930s in the midst of the Great Depression when we had unemployment at about 25%. We had lots of people simply dying of not having enough money to pay for themselves, whether it's the farmers, in the Dust Bowl, or at that time, the nation's elderly, those over 65, were the poorest people in the nation, and they did not have enough because we can argue about why they didn't have enough. My argument is that the companies they worked for mistreated them, didn't provide enough pensions like Enron, but for whatever reason, they didn't have the savings, and so they were simply left out to dry. There was no Medicare, no Medicaid at that time. They had no savings, and so the prevailing wisdom among the Republicans of that day was, too bad, you just have to die. You should have prepared for yourself. At that time, the Democrats under Franklin Delano Roosevelt started the Social Security system, and there was an immediate need. There was an immediate danger. There were millions, probably tens of millions, of elderly Americans that needed help, and so what he did is he started the Social Security system. Now, and that gave immediately a lot of payments to that to those elderly, and those payments, admittedly, came from young working people. Now, it seems to me, and we can go back to the 30s, that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had two choices, either to let the Depression continue and let all those elderly people die, or to start paying them, even though it's true those old people didn't put into the system. And this is where the contract of generations came, where today's workers pay for today's retirees, and so you don't earn as much as if you put your money in the bank and let it add over time. I guess my first question for you, Tom, is had you been a voter in the legislature back in the 1930s, would you have voted against saving those poor elderly during the Depression?
Well, Mark, I consider myself a compassionate conservative, so I definitely would have taken steps to initiate a system that would have provided immediate relief. But what we see now is we see basically a golden nugget that there's a lot of legislators don't even want to touch, even though they know that they're literally killing the golden goose and that one day Social Security will just stop producing those benefits. And they've created a system which there's no other way to put it except in the context of a pyramid scheme to my generation.
Well, okay, well, let's go through it. So you agree that we should have paid money to help the elderly of the 1930s. I think so, too. I think it was a humanitarian crisis. And, of course, it does set up, you can call it a scheme, you can call it whatever word you want, but it does set up where today's workers pay for today's retirees. That's the system as it works throughout the 30s. And because the people who got the money up front didn't put any money into the system, you don't get as much as if you put your money in the other retirement plans that the government has set up, things like 401ks and IRAs, all of which I support. That's true. Now we reach a system today, or maybe we can go fast forward to the Clinton years. During the Clinton years, we have a system where we have Social Security, and we have the amounts that we're paying in, and they're not enough to pay for my retirement or for yours, Tom. And so that you have three choices. You can either cut benefits for current retirees. That was one possibility. Number two, you could raise taxes on everyone to pay for it. That was option two. Option three was the Clinton option, and that was to devote half of the huge budget surplus that Clinton created, again, the greatest budget surplus in American history, and devote that budget surplus to Social Security to help fix the system. I like the Clinton plan, option three, Tom, but I want to see whether you support options one or two or some other option.
Well, obviously you have options one, two, and three, but you're forgetting option number four.
Which is
what?
And
that is putting trust in the American people and saying that, you know, it's the tired, basically old record that the left likes to play that says we need total control, we need more authority, and we need more of your money because you're not competent enough, American middle class, to make decisions on your own. I feel, and I support a system which, if okay, so be it. The government forcibly takes money out of my paycheck, and I don't know if I'm going to get it in the form of Social Security when I'm older and I retire, but at least give me some of that money so that I can invest it for myself, because I will get a greater return, I will stimulate the economy, and I will create a system where there will be more wealth and there will be a better environment for me to retire in.
Okay, Tom, but as you know, we're not beginning step one here. We're not starting a system today. We have to pay for the retirees that exist. So my first question is, would you cut off current retirees who've paid into the system? I guess your answer is no.
Right.
Okay, you're not going to cut into them. So, but you want to contribute less to the system, right?
Well, I think people who are currently going to be stepping up to the plate, if you want to make that cutoff, you know, 25 and younger, so I qualify, or if you want to make that 18, or at some point that you can say, okay, I want some partial control so that I can invest my money into whether it is, you know, whether it's investments or stock markets or, you know, money or portfolios, whatever it is, and a certain percentage of that gets kicked back to the federal government, but I get to keep some of it, then there's an incentive environment.
Terrific, Tom. Then you and I agree. I certainly support that. That actually was, if you recall, that was Al Gore's plan in 2000. He called it Social Security Plus. And his idea was that we do have to pay for current retirees. Some of the money goes to Social Security, but that we expand things like IRAs and 401ks. And what are those things? Those are exactly what you're talking about, Tom. That's your money that you can invest wherever you want, and you do it tax-free, so the government helps you invest tax-free for your retirement. So we have Social Security to protect current retirees, which is this compact between generations that's lasted since the 30s, and you have Social Security Plus. You can put the money away for your retirement, 401ks, IRAs, for college education. Sounds to me, Tom, like you like the Gore plan.
Well, you know what? It's great if you like the Gore plan, you know, because the problem is you need to pick up the phone when we're done with this debate. You need to call Congressman Robert Matsui, who is the ranking Democrat on the Social Security subcommittee, because he told me face-to-face, point-blank, I do not and will not allow you to take Social Security money or what we're talking about and putting that into the private sector, whether that be stocks or other options or retirement plans. He's 100% completely against it and does not want to budge or give an inch on it.
Yeah, but Tom, I think you're being inconsistent. What I talked about and what I think Mr. Matsui would support is Social Security Plus. You keep Social Security, this compact between generations, and you provide 401ks, IRAs, other retirement plans where you can invest your money. It seems to me like you want Social Security minus. You want to actually take money from current retirees, and I'm sure Matsui doesn't like that. But am I right? Do you want to actually restrict what current retirees are getting? And if you don't, where are you going to get the money to pay them if you're not putting money in the system?
No, I want Social Security not minus or plus. I want Social Security plus plus, where I'm paying into the system, but there's also incentives where I can invest in the stock market.
But there are. What's the IRA? What's 401ks? Those incentives exist. You haven't addressed that.
I'm telling you straight up that point blank, Congressman Matsui fights tooth and nail against it.
No, but my question,
he's not endorsing, he's not in favor of, and he is the Democrat who is the head spokesman on this issue, and he's not going in the direction in which you want him to go, or according to you, Al Gore.
Well, I'd be very surprised if, I mean, you can prove it to me, but I'd be very surprised if Congressman Matsui is for ending 401ks, is for ending IRAs. I don't think he is. Is that what you're saying?
No, what he doesn't want to do is he doesn't want to allow you to take some of your money and to invest it and then give part of that return back to the federal government. See, I can invest.
But Tom, that's what a 401k, that's what an IRA does. In fact, you don't have to give any return to the federal government. It's your money. You invest it for your retirement. You can't take it out except for retirement or education or a bad medical problem, and that keeps people, you know, from just grabbing the funds and making sure it's available for their retirement, which I support. I don't understand your problem, really. You're saying that you want to take away from some of Social Security, right? You want to put less money in the Social Security system. Is that what you want?
In the end, I want to put more. Temporarily, I want to be able to have people have control over some of their money to be able to invest that privately or how they see fit. And then when they get returns on that money, they have to pay part of that, equalizing the same amount that they would have given to Social Security, because they will be able to get more than what Social Security would have been taking from investing the same amount of money.
Some will and some won't, but I'm just trying to understand.
I trust the American people. I think that they're smart. I think they're intelligent. I think when they have control of their own money, they're going to do a better job than the federal government.
But what I'm trying to understand is you want to put less part of your paycheck in the Social Security system every week. Is that what you're saying?
I want less of it to go to Social Security, but part of it can be mandated that I have to invest it in some way, shape, or form as I see fit, and I have to give a certain part of that return, equalizing what I would have given in Social Security back to the federal government. That would be fine, because at least it gives me some incentive and some control and create some kind of ownership in my market.
Okay, and what I'm arguing is that's what happens today with your 401k. That's what happens with your IRA. And, of course, the overall problem, though, I don't think you're addressing, and that is the problem of there not being enough money in the system. I think you're right. I think that your generation and mine is going to have a hard time getting Social Security, but that's largely due to Bush's tax cuts. I mean, during the Clinton era, before the tax cuts, when we had these huge surpluses, we were going to fix that statistical problem that's going to happen when those baby boomers retire. We were going to be to have money in Social Security. Now, with the huge tax cuts and the huge budget deficit, I don't understand. What is the Bush plan for Social Security? Explain to me. Is it to cut retiree benefits? Is it to increase taxes, Social Security taxes? What is his plan?
His plan is, you know, simple, is that he wants to create a society of stakeholders in which people – what happens now is your money gets taken out. You have no control over it, and you're told to expect the money, you know, down the road.
But you are
a
stakeholder.
You don't know where that money goes.
But you know,
control, and I think if they're allowed more control, so you're investing, say, half of it or 75% of it, but at least you have control over 25% of it, you're more willing to take a look at that money, to be in control of that money, take ownership of it, so you're more likely to double or triple it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more time, and then we're going to move on to another issue. Explain to me how what you're advocating is any different from the current system where we have Social Security and 401k IRA retirement plans. It seems to me a 401k IRA retirement plan is exactly what you're talking about.
Because it'll expand it. Because I think when you put Social Security dead straight into the federal treasury, the amount of movement or the amount of growth that you get on it is very minimal. So the more money that I can be mandated to spend in private investment, whether that's to stockholders or any other program, the higher rate of return of investment that I'll get. I want to expand that.
And how do we pay for current retirees if you're putting less in the system?
I think there's some things that you have to look at the budget as far as moving around and different priorities and whatnot.
Well, but you're not giving any. I mean, there's money here. You got to pay for current retirees unless you're going to cut their benefits. And I got to tell you, you have a whole bunch of angry seniors coming at your door, and I don't blame them because they put in the system. See, there is a stake. You have a stake in the system. When you put in Social Security, you have a right to expect that you get it back. And whatever happened in the 1930s, current seniors have been putting into Social Security for 30 years, and I don't see how we can cut their returns. But if we can't cut their returns and we don't raise taxes, I don't see how we pay for it.
Do you really think that people have a right to get it back? Because I would think that, Mark, you'd be someone who argues that Bill Gates shouldn't get his Social Security back.
Well, I think he can get some of it back, absolutely. It is part of a stakeholder, but he can be taxed on it.
So you think you know, people that are millionaires and billionaires should also get that money back?
Well, part of the problem with millionaires and billionaires is they haven't put in the system as much a percentage of their wealth as lower middle class people. I have real problems with Social Security tax. My problem is that it's capped at 80,000 something. So if you are a middle class person or a poor person, you pay a much greater percentage of your income in taxes to Social Security than if you're a multimillionaire. If you're a multimillionaire, you pay 0.1% or so of your income, Social Security. If you're poor, you pay, you know, 15%. So it seems to me that this is a regressive tax. It's a tax that primarily harms poor middle class people. And I'd much rather reduce Social Security taxes and increase, you know, estate taxes, people who earn money because they have a rich relative who died with hundreds of millions. I have much less concern for them, the rich heir, trust fund baby, Anna Nicole Smith, than I do for someone working hard to make a living.
Well, I think that part of it is that you have, quote-unquote, you know, rich people, is that, yeah, they only pay a certain percent and it's capped, but they only get that certain percent back.
Well, that's
right.
They don't
get more money, so it's completely balanced out.
Well, except that I don't think it's balanced out when you have basically the fact that the poor middle class people have to contribute to the system and rich don't. I think that the rich can afford to pay more into the system, and I have no problem them asking them to do it. It's, you know, if you want to be able to invest your money and watch it, invest it all in Enron, and you lose your shirt, and then you're going to rely on the government dole, okay? But if you want to be able to rely on the government in bad times, you should be able in good times to contribute something to the national health. I want to go to commercial break, and then I want to move on to other topics, unless this is a topic that you folks want to discuss. You're always welcome to do it. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. When we come back, I want to play a quite a fierce exchange on the House floor by Democratic Representative Corinne Brown, African-American Florida congresswoman, who says the Republicans stole the election. Comments were censored by the House. You won't want to miss it when we come back. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back this Election Tuesday right after this.
Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA, FBI, and military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, the mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-AUTO.
Welcome Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. Today is Tuesday, which is Election Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop. And I'm debating with Tom Robbins, the state chair of the College Republicans, the Utah state chair, I should say. And we're talking about Social Security and a host of other issues. And if you want to join in, you know how to do it by now. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, 877-577-2667. Or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. And we've gotten a bunch of comments on the blog. I want to read some of them to you. Got a comment from my most trusted conservative listener, Ben. He says, Mark, what is he talking about that's not hard to understand? If you choose to invest in 401ks, that's over and above your Social Security. What Tom is saying is reduce Social Security and mandate investing a certain percentage. How is that so hard to understand? He's explained it four times. That's the difference. The thing that I don't understand, Ben, is if you reduce Social Security, which is what you're saying, Tom's saying, if you reduce Social Security, then how do you pay for the current retirees? The only way to do it would be to raise taxes, to end the Bush tax cuts, or to somehow get more money in the system, or run huge deficits that Tom's generation is going to have to pay back anyway. And that's the thing that I don't think I'm getting an answer from Tom on, but I'll give you one last shot at it, Tom.
I think the bottom line is you got to cut the fat. You got to trim, you know, you got to trim the federal government.
Both what fat?
To get together on this
okay,
one.
Tell me the fat.
But it's a part in a system of bureaucracy of the federal government where duplication is basically the norm.
It's so easy to say, trim the fat, trim the fat. Absolutely. You know what? I agree with you. Let's get rid of waste in government. I want you to tell me all the fat that you're going to trim. What programs are you going to cut? Let's go. What do you think? What? Give me, look, Social Security, this is hundreds of billions of dollars. So just give me $100 billion. Just $100 billion you would cut. Where would you start? Military?
I think
Medicare?
You could start in the Department of Energy.
Department of Energy. Well, you know what? I'm going to agree with you there because the Department of Energy gives huge tax loopholes to Exxon and Halliburton and Mobil. This is, after all, let me agree with you. This is, after all, what Bush's supporters most support is the Department of Energy because they give corporate welfare. In fact, we just talked about a bill a couple weeks ago where they gave $150 billion to oil companies. Will you agree with me that those things have got to go?
I think you got to look at each thing individually, but I think Department of Energy has some areas there. There's some
good. We agree.
There's some areas in every single department. A lot of
I don't know
the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA does is all duplication. That needs to be streamlined. That needs to be brought together. So
well, this is really interesting. You know, I got to give you credit for naming real things. I didn't think you would. The Department of Energy, I would love to cut. I think you're going to have to talk to your president because these two oil men who are our president and vice president really love those corporate tax loopholes for oil companies. I'm glad you agree with me they should be cut. And as for the FBI, CIA, and NSA, they are so messed up right now. They are so incompetent right now. I think they need all the help they can get. I don't know that it's waste that's the problem. I think it's more incompetence. I'm more hesitant to cut those. But cutting corporate tax loopholes for rich oil companies, I absolutely agree with you, and I'm glad to see we have some agreement here. I want to move on, talk about something else that I mentioned. And the two issues I think are related. It has to do with the Bush administration's so-called compassionate conservatism. And the fact that, they're not really reaching out to the African-American community. When Bush is asked about it, he always points to the, Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, that he's appointed black members of his cabinet. But I don't understand why he won't talk to the oldest and most respected civil rights organization in the country, the NAACP. And furthermore, what is going on here with Corinne Brown? I want to play a statement that she made on the House floor and also how the Republicans responded to it, the Republicans in the House. Listen in.
I come from Florida, where you and others participated in what I call the United States coup d'etat. We need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Over and over again, after the election, when you stole the election, you came back here and said, get over it. No, we're not going to get over it. And we want verification from the world.
Well, Congresswoman Corinne Brown silenced by the U.S. House today.
In a debate over an amendment involving election monitoring in Florida, Representative Brown called the 2000 elections, as you heard her, a coup d'etat. House members voted her out of order and struck her words from the record. The House also punished Brown by not letting her speak for the rest of the day.
Okay, strong rhetoric, you bet. It is very strong rhetoric to say the truth, I believe, about what happened in 2000, that the Republicans stole the election, that blacks particularly, but Democrats in general, were intentionally disenfranchised from the Florida voting rolls. Now, we've done stories about this. We've done it on air, and we don't have to, unless you want to, discuss whether that's true or not. My point is this. Did Corinne Brown make a strong charge? She did, a very strong charge. And she's an African-American woman. She's a congresswoman from the state of Florida. Shouldn't she at least, Tom, be allowed to speak her mind on the floor of Congress? Do you agree with the decision of the majority in the House, the Republican majority, to shut her up, to take these words from the record, and to prevent her from speaking for the rest of the day? Do you agree with that decision?
Well, I agree with exactly what, you know, Democrats such as Tip O'Neill used to do when they were in power, and that's control the actual topic of debate to actually what is being discussed and debated.
Oh, no, but that was the topic of debate. The question was, the topic for debate, just to be clear, was whether there should be election monitors in Florida, whether we should allow independent people to come into Florida, as this representative from Florida was asking them to do, to check to make sure that people who have a right to vote are allowed to vote. That was the topic. Now, she went on and said that the election was stolen in 2000. I happen to think that's true. I'm sure you think it's not, and it's strong rhetoric, true, but it was definitely on topic. I think they ruled her out of order, not because she wasn't on topic, but because they didn't like what she had to say.
Well, I think, you know, any congresswoman, she can be held a press conference, she can do whatever she wants to be able to get media and attention. I think the business of the Congress has to go forward. That issue has been debated on multiple different occasions, and I think that there's important things that need to get done. They move forward, and, you know, she can do other things to draw attention to herself. She can jump and scream with a bunch of other Democrats at the National Convention coming up next week.
Wait a minute. She's a representative to the United States Congress, elected by the people of her district to speak out on their concerns. What is their concern? That they be allowed to vote, the most basic right in a democracy. And she's speaking on topic at a House debate, saying that, hoping that her constituents will be allowed the right to vote, that there be election monitors to do that, and they censor her. Now, you're not telling me you support that, are you, Tom?
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, as far as what was said, you know, I didn't get the full entire breadth of her comments, is that you want to specifically, you know, in a debate like that, tailor it to specifically whether or not you support, you know, and you don't need to go into a 20-minute tirade about, you know, coup d'etats and whatnot, conspiracy theories and government and cabinet officials and everything.
Well, you should have heard what they said about Bill Clinton on the House floor, and I don't remember any Democrats, you know, trying to censor those remarks. Look, freedom of speech. I mean, that's why I have you on my program, Tom. We disagree, and her words were strong. I grant that. But
well, I think part of the problem is the hypocrisy that you see in a Democratic Party is that they want certain things out in the open, and they want you to be completely flabbergasted if they're censored. But on the other hand, they're censoring a bunch of things every single day.
What is the Democratic Party censoring?
Well, for example, Senator John Kerry, who hopes to be the next president of the United States, at the Radio City Music Hall, a fundraiser on his behalf, he said that every performer tonight, in their own way, either verbally or through their music or through their lyrics, has conveyed to you the heart and soul of the country. But as we now know, those performers went on to call President George W. Bush a thug. They went on to make very, very crude and disgusting jokes. They called him, quote-unquote, a killer. And the Republican National Committee, Chairman Eglovsky, has called upon Senator Kerry to release the audio or the videotape from that event to be able to see really what went on there. And the Kerry campaign is confused. Why? Because they want to censor things that don't look good.
Well, no, wait. You're calling it censorship. If artists want to come out publicly and say whatever they want about George Bush or about John Kerry, for that matter, I don't see anyone in the Democratic Party trying to shut them down. Please, let's be clear here. There's one thing between stopping someone else from speaking, which is what I call censorship, and choosing not to release someone else's remarks that aren't yours without their permission, which I think it goes to those artists. If they want to release their remarks, they do. If they don't, it's not up to John Kerry to do it. But I mean,
well, John Kerry, you always talk about how the buck has to stop at the presidency. If he wants to be the president and people are using crude and disgusting language and he calls that the heart and soul of America, he has a responsibility to open up that discussion and to expose basically what his supporters feel the heart and soul of America, and that is calling President Bush a thug and a killer and making disgusting references to the Bush name and whatnot.
Well, as far as disgusting references to the Bush name, I assume you're talking about Whoopi Goldberg's comment relating to female anatomy.
Well, that was just one of the many comments that were made in this heart and soul of America.
Well, let me ask you this. Whether or not a presidential candidate has an obligation to release his supporters' comments to the press, I don't know, but do you agree that a presidential candidate should release his own comments to the press, that in a campaign gathering? Do you think so?
Well, I think that there needs to be both sides of willingness to have dialogue. You have probably the Bush campaign is probably saying, you know, we want to do X, Y, and Z, but you have the Kerry campaign saying we don't want to do A, B, and C.
But Tom, but answer my question. Should a presidential candidate who gives private remarks, okay, at a campaign gathering, should he release those remarks?
I think that when those remarks are made in the context of this represents the heart and soul of America, I think it's important for voters to know what the heart and the soul
of America
is.
Well, let's talk about what George Bush is reported to have said. He was in a Amish country in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he met with some 60 Amish Americans. And in that conversation, many of those Amish, not just one, have reported that George Bush said something to the effect of, God speaks through me. George Bush said that God was speaking through him. Now, these Amish people, frankly, I think I have no reason to distrust them, to think they're dishonest. I think these are hard-working religious people. They say that George Bush said God works through him. Now, George Bush has refused to release those comments, and I think we have a right to know whether our president has a messianic complex. It seems to me that's far more important than knowing what Whoopi Goldberg said about Bush's name compared to female anatomy. She's making maybe a bad taste joke, but when our president has a messianic complex, shouldn't those remarks be released to the public?
Well, I think when you have a situation where Kerry, quote-unquote, is saying that the comments made at his fundraiser represented the heart and soul of America, but included comments such as, you know, President Clinton is a thug and a quote-unquote killer, and elaborates on that, and he's been called upon to release that. I mean,
Should Bush release his remarks to the Amish?
I think that in certain circumstances that could or, you know, could not be released, but I think Kerry...
Why shouldn't Bush release... If Bush said to the Amish, as he's reported to have said, and again, I wasn't there, but I have no reason to distrust these several Amish farmers who seem to me to be very much a heart and soul of one aspect of America, if he said that God speaks through me to the Amish, do you think that that the exact quote should be released to the public? Let us decide what it is that the president said.
Sure. If you agree that Kerry's comments should be released, that'd be fine.
Kerry's comments, yes, but you know, supporters' comments. I don't think that a president can always be held accountable for what their supporters say. And
John Kerry attacked the College Republican National Committee and sent out a mass email to all supporters when he was floundering against Howard Dean in Iowa, attacking the College Republican National Committee because at our national convention we had many vendors, just like any national convention does, with thousands of items sold, and one or two of those items were, in my opinion, not even just my opinion, were tasteless. One or two T-shirts just had slogans on them that were just completely inappropriate.
Okay.
He magnified that, sent out a mass email to all his supporters when he was floundering in Iowa and said, do you see what the College Republican National Committee is doing? We need to raise money. And he attacked the College Republican National Committee. I mean, that just shows the true character. John Kerry, when he needed money and he needed to fill his campaign coffers, went after College Students of America. And I think that just shows his true colors.
Let me agree with you here, Tom. I think that you can't always be held accountable for what your fellow travelers do. I do think that when you are aware of it, then you should do what you can to stop them. And, of course, it depends on how tasteless and what's the comment, and I don't know the details of how bad it was. But I would hope that once you found out that people were selling things that were, I don't know how offensive they were. If they were slightly offensive, I think that's fine. That's what political discussion is all about. If they were extremely offensive, then I would hope you took actions to remove those items.
But my point of the whole entire matter is here is when Senator John Kerry couldn't raise a buck to his name because the unions were supporting Dick Gephardt and Howard Dean, and he was floundering in Iowa and way behind in the polls, he attacked the College Republican National Committee because of different vendors at our national convention that were selling one or two tasteless items. And you are saying that it's okay for him to be able to fill his coffers with attacking the College Republicans, but it's not okay for to release different statements that were made by his supporters representing the quote-unquote heart and soul of America.
I got news for you, Tom. I don't think Kerry raised much money by attacking the College National Republicans. I don't think this was very much the focus of his campaign. And I don't even know whether these attacks were by Kerry personally.
They were on his website, and they were on his website. And they were an official. And in fact, you can look at, you know, anyone who's listening to this radio show can look on the College Republican National Committee and you can call the National Press Secretary because we had to send out a press release saying, hey, Kerry, stop attacking college students.
He wasn't attacking college students. He was attacking your allowing some, and you still haven't described how offensive these things were. What did they say, man? Maybe if you can't say it because it's a curse word, then allude to it. What did they say? How offensive were they?
I think it was inappropriate, basically.
Okay, well, so you agree they were inappropriate. So,
yeah.
So it sounds to me like you agree with John Kerry that these things were inappropriate and shouldn't have been at your convention. So how was he attacking you?
Because instead of bringing that to our attention and saying, hey, could you remove this, he decided when he was low in his funds to attack college students and use that college students as a pawn in his inability to try to raise money. And he sent it out as an official campaign fundraising effort.
Somehow, I don't know what the Kerry people did there, but I don't think it was John Kerry.
You know, when you're grasping at the straws and Howard Dean's kicking your butt by then 15, 20 percentage points in some polls, you'll do just about anything to jumpstart your campaign. And I think
when you're desperate,
can attack the College Republican National Committee on tasteless things that were sold at our convention, basically without our consent, without us really knowing about them because they're one or two items, we can ask him to open up statements by huge celebrity endorsers who are calling President Bush a thug and a killer.
Well, but you won't talk about whether Bush should talk about his statement that he has a messianic complex, that God's speaking through him to the Amish. I mean, you're really being inconsistent here, Tom. Again, clearly a candidate's statements has got to be more important than their supporter statements, doesn't it?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to weigh both of them, and you have to let the electorate decide. And I think if the Bush...
go ahead.
I don't have the specifics, you know, just like you don't have the specifics on the fundraising stuff, and I can get that to you. I don't have the specifics on the total context of the Amish stuff. And I think that, you know, there probably is a way to open that up and to be able to have people look at that, and I think in the end it won't be a problem.
Okay, well, I think that definitely candidate statements should be open to the public. And let me just ask you, though, because we kind of got off subject before we take another break. It sounds to me, I haven't quite gotten clear whether you think the House should have kept Corinne Brown from speaking on the House of Representatives. But don't you think, do you think that was okay? And number two, doesn't this really harm Bush's perception among African Americans when he won't even speak to their oldest and most celebrated civil rights organization?
No, I think that President Bush has said that he's willing to engage in organizations that are predominantly African American, or willing to sit down and at the table and have a frank discussion and talk things out. The NCAAP has consistently used their national organization not to engage in a constructive dialogue, but to attack the President of the United States, such as when he's trying to confirm, Judge Pickering to the bench, where you have Megar Evers' brother who supports that nomination because of the great things that Judge Pickering was able to do, and you have the NCAAP just blindly writing out.
Well, but wait, so because he disagrees, I mean, first of all, I this is the same justice that supports cross-burning, so there's all kinds of stuff here.
No, that's completely unfair and just completely out of context.
Well, no, he lowered...
Judge Pickering he had his own kids attend integrated schools when he could have pulled them out, and he took great steps and great lengths to be able to fight for civil rights on many different levels.
Well,
the party is taking one issue and one ruling and trying to blow it up out of context. Megar Evers' brother supports Judge Pickering for good reason.
There's all kinds of discussions about Judge Pickering, and you can read about it. We did a whole show on judicial picks, and we can talk about whether he was right to reduce the sentence of someone who was burning a cross and all those things. My question is not about Judge Pickering, but do you think that because they disagree on a judge, that he shouldn't even appear at their convention? I mean, don't you think at the very least this is a political error? There are plenty of groups that I respect that, I may disagree with from time to time, but to not speak before the oldest and grandest civil rights organization of the United States, to not even show up at their convention because they disagree with him on a judge pick, do you really think that was smart on Bush's behalf?
Well, I think Bush, he's a person who wants to engage in constructive dialogue to get things done.
Really?
And I think as he does that, he engages with groups and organizations and representatives of organizations that are actually worried about moving the dialogue forward.
Now,
and there are some people in the NAACP who want to do that, but unfortunately right now you have many of the leaders who are using their position to use it as a bully pulpit to attack the President of the United States.
Well, wait a minute. Any organization of American citizens has the right, duty, and obligation to express their positions, whatever they may be, whether you're pro-life, pro-choice, NRA, I don't care who you are. You should be expressing your positions. That's why Americans join together.
But should Bill Clinton show up to the National Pro-Life Federation Convention? No.
Well, there's a difference, though. The NAACP represents a whole group of Americans, whatever their political position. They just support civil rights. I mean, it's one thing if either you support civil rights or you don't. I assume, maybe I shouldn't assume this, that George Bush's sort supports civil rights.
Of course, President Bush supports
civil
rights.
I'll give you an example.
Wait.
Let me give you an example. I think Clinton, or Kerry for that matter, should speak before a group, let's say, of Southern Baptists. Okay? This is a group of Americans. He may disagree with many of the things that they support, but I think it's fair to support them. But when you go before a pro-life organization, then you're saying, in essence, I'm pro-life. It's one thing to say I support civil rights. It's another thing to say I support everything the NAACP stands for. And why didn't he go there and say, let me tell you why I disagree with you about Judge Pickering. Let me tell you why I think Judge Pickering would have been a good choice. Let me tell you why I respect the history and tradition of the NAACP, Thurgood Marshall, the people who brought civil rights to America in that long, proud history. But I think your organization's gone astray. Why not be honest and do that? It's, as you could do with Kerry could do with the Southern Baptists. I support your religious principles, but I disagree with you when you say that all women have to obey all men. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I think what will happen is if Kerry does that, he'll make it through about 2 minutes of his speech, and George W. Bush does that, he'll make it through 2 minutes of his speech. And I think that there's other groups out there, not just the NAACP, who also represent many mainstream African Americans and that have their point of view and interest in mind, are trying to further the dialogue in civil rights, and he has sat down and engaged himself in conversation with those organizations.
What we've seen is wherever we have organizations that care about civil rights, they've been shunned by this administration.
No, I
remember back 4 years ago when a group of gay Republicans wanted to meet with George Bush. They were the log cabin. They're very strong Republicans. And George Bush said, no, I won't meet with you. And then he handpicked a group of people who he said he would meet with. It just seems to me that George Bush doesn't like to meet with people who disagree with him. Maybe he can't handle it. I don't know.
I think in the bottom line is anything we're going to talk about, whether or not it's Enron or pensions or Social Security, the bottom line is character.
Yeah, the bottom line is character.
And interesting enough, the last time we had this debate, Mark, I said, what do you like about John Kerry? You said, his character.
That's
so
right.
What I want to know from you, because character is such an important thing, and you attack President Bush's character every day on the show, and you prop up Senator Kerry's character any time that you get, and you defend Clinton's character, which is a different topic of conversation, will you or will you not call for Senator John Kerry to disengage Sandy Berger from his administration or from future appointments, because he's literally put Winona Ryder on alert, saying that he's someone that likes to shoplift. He's someone who likes to go behind.
Oh, now
doors.
Wait a minute! Someone who likes to shoplift? Here you're talking about. No way!
He's taking national security.
Well, let's talk about what's happened. Okay, he was ordered to go before the 9/11 commission,
right.
And he was ordered under short time to get all this material ready. He went in. He did it. I should note that he was willing to give them unlimited time, unlike George Bush, who gave him a very limited time. Would not testify under oath. Would not testify in public, and had to have Dick Cheney holding his hand by his side. But Sandy Berger went under these conditions, and he went through documents, and there were several drafts of a document that related to the Millennium Plot. As you recall, that's the plot that Clinton helped foil under the Clinton administration, the plot to blow up Los Angeles Airport. And afterward, there were several drafts of a memo, and he was making notes on them, and according to him, and I don't know if you have any information this was intentional, you let me know. According to him, he inadvertently took one of the drafts when he was picking his notes, and he put it in his jacket pocket, and he took it out. Now, do you think he was intentionally trying to destroy a National Archive document, or do you think that he was a little forgetful and made a mistake?
I think a little forgetful and made a mistake. We're not talking about some, college summer intern here. We're talking about somebody who used to be the deputy National Security Administration director.
Shouldn't have done it.
93 to 96. From 97 to 01, he was a National Security Advisor.
Mm-hmm.
He is someone who understands completely, is aware of going into a secure room. And I don't think you magically just walk off some papers. And he took more than just one document. In fact, the FBI and different reports that are coming in the news media links as we speak right now in the show are reporting that when they subpoenaed, they went in, they searched his home, there are two documents that he doesn't know what happened to him. He doesn't know.
What these documents are, just to be clear, I don't know whether you're alleging some vast left-wing conspiracy here, but just to be clear, there are some 15 drafts of this post-millennium document, and apparently one or two of those drafts are missing. I'm not saying he did a good thing in taking the documents out, but are you saying that he intentionally was trying to do what, I guess, Enron executives have done or what Cheney has done with the Energy Commission, to hide documents, to shred documents? Are you saying that is that what you're charging here?
I think that there needs to be a serious investigation, because Sandy Berger is somebody who, to make a huge error as to make a misstep like this.
I don't mind investigation. Would you agree that we should do an investigation into all the payments that Enron has made to the Republican National Committee to redistrict Texas and all the favors they got for them? Will you support that investigation, or you think that's not as important as Sandy Berger maybe taking one draft of 15 of a document? Which do you think is more important?
I'm not too worried about the different news media outlets such as yourself or CNN or anyone else doing a full, thorough, tooth-comb investigation of both the Democratic campaign finance and the Republican campaign finance. There's
okay,
literally
so you would support...
I need to work on that every day, but the point is...
Just to be clear, you would support Dick Cheney being open about who was on his energy commission and what was the quid pro quo, what deals they made to... where they paid the Republican National Committee and they got benefits from the federal government. You think all of that should be investigated. Can you agree with me on that? Because I certainly agree that we can investigate Sandy Berger. Will you agree to investigate these oil company ties and the Energy Commission?
I think there needs to be a fair and balanced investigation on both sides.
Good.
Whether or not
good.
On the Democrat side and the Republican side of campaign finance, and I think that'll be done. I don't think the news media is going to give anyone a free pass. But unfortunately, if Condoleezza Rice had done this, if she would have went to the National Archives and quote-unquote pulled the Winona Ryder and just kind of walked off with something without knowing it, you would have her head on a platter. It would be the first thing you'd want to talk about.
Condoleezza Rice,
you would not give her a free pass.
She did much worse than walk off with a document. What she did is she lied under oath before the 9/11 Commission and before the country, and then had to turn around. And worse than that, she said that we have to fear a mushroom cloud, a nuclear cloud, over the United States when she knew there was no evidence of that. That, to me, is far more serious than Sandy Berger. We got to go to commercial break. We'll continue these comments afterwards, and then the phone lines have lit up, and I want to get to my callers. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back after this.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 911, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate. At least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they published the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shrieked the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use as directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
In November of 2004, we've got to get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't get their heads on the door.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. Today is Election Tuesday, and every Tuesday we have a debate with our Republican colleagues over the direction of the country, over who should be investigated. I think that the president should be investigated, specifically the president should be investigated over how he used intelligence in the Iraq War. I think that Dick Cheney should stop hiding who it is that contributed to his energy campaign and how it is that those favors were rewarded. What is this money corruption going back and forth? And Tom believes that Sandy Berger should be investigated for a document, one of many drafts that he took from the National Archives, in his response to the September 11th commission. And I will agree, I have no problem investigating Sandy Berger. Let's see whether this is part of a mass conspiracy or whether the guy made a forgetful mistake. And I'm glad to hear that Tom also wants to investigate the president's actions. I investigations should occur. I'd like to ask Tom and our viewers, and our listeners, I should say, at 877-57-SCOOP, can you tell me how many subpoenas this Republican Congress has issued in the 4 years since we've had a Republican Congress, 2 years in the Senate and 4 years in the House, how many subpoenas have they issued against the Bush administration to do an investigation? Do you know the answer to that, Tom?
I do not.
The answer is zero. They have issued zero subpoenas. Now, during the Clinton administration, the Republican Congress issued more than 1,000 subpoenas, and this Congress has issued zero. So I think it's fair to say that this Congress is not interested in investigating anything. It'll be interesting if they turn on Sandy Berger. But I'm glad that you agree with me, Tom, that these other things, Halliburton has to be investigated, the Cheney Energy Commission, he went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court to hide that. What do you think he's hiding there?
Well, I think the Democratic Party needs to be investigated. I mean, we never really got the full figures of how much, you know, certain Chinese businessmen gave President Clinton.
Okay, you want to talk about Chinese businessmen 5 years ago. I want to talk about Tom DeLay today. We now know that Tom DeLay money laundered. What he did is he took corporate contributions from companies throughout, outside of Texas. He funneled that into Texas legislative races, okay, even though that's completely against the law in Texas, and he did it through the Republican National Committee. Now, if these charges are true, do you agree that Tom DeLay should resign?
I think that, you know, what needs to happen is that there's going to be an open investigation on the Democratic side to figure out Chinese business dealings.
There needs
to be stuff happening on the Republican side. And I think you let things air out and you figure out what's going to happen. But I think, unfortunately, obviously, when something so big as somebody who's been involved as the deputy security advisor for so many years and then served as the chief security advisor is going to make a misstep, which is accidentally walk off with papers in a secure room with the most sensitive 9/11 documents that this country has. I think that.
Well, okay, except of course, these were not 9/11 documents. We know they were. There was one of 15 drafts of a post-millennium debriefing. Again, I'm not justifying it, and by all means, let's find out whether it was intentional or inadvertent. One thing I guess we don't both agree on, Tom, and I'm glad to see, is we both think these things should be investigated. The Republicans have been resisting their investigations, and I think it should be investigated, too. I don't think it's that big a deal. But by all means, let's have an investigation. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We had some callers on the line. They dropped off. But I do want to read to you some of the quotes that President Bush has made that I think we need to investigate. 3 days before the invasion of Iraq, Bush said in an address to the nation, quote, "There is no question we have evidence and information that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical." We also have, December 16th, in an interview with television anchor woman Diane Sawyer, she pressed Bush on the fact that we'd been 9 months in Iraq and we hadn't found any unconventional weapons, and Bush kept saying yet. Well, Diane Sawyer said, she persisted, she said, but the administration, you said flat out, they had such weapons. You didn't say there was a possibility that he could acquire them. You said flat out he had such weapons. And Bush said, so what's the difference? Bush doesn't seem to understand the difference between the possibility of having weapons of mass destruction and what he said on March 17th. There is no question we have evidence and information that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical. And the reason I bring this up, and I'm going to give you a chance to respond in a second, is because of the exchange, the very recent exchange between veteran reporter Helen Thomas and Press Secretary Scott McClellan, which I thought was very interesting. Let me read to you that exchange, and I'll give you a chance to comment, Tom. Helen Thomas to Scott McClellan. Helen Thomas says, "Prime Minister Blair took full personal responsibility for taking his nation into war under falsehoods, under reasons that have been determined now to be false. Is President Bush also willing to take full personal responsibility?" Scott McClellan, "I think Prime Minister Blair said it was the right thing to do, that Saddam Hussein's regime was a threat." Thomas, "Those were not the reasons he took his country into war. It turned out to be untrue, and the same is true for us. Does the president take full personal responsibility for this war?" McClellan, "The issue here is, what do you do with a threat in post-September 11th world? Either you live with the threat or you confront the threat." Thomas, "There was no threat." McClellan, "The president made the decision to confront the threat." Thomas, "Saddam Hussein did not threaten this country." McClellan. The world, the Congress, and the administration disagree. They recognize there was a threat posed by Saddam Hussein. When it came to September 11th, that changed the equation. It taught us, Thomas, the Intelligence Committee said there was no threat. McClellan, as I said, it taught us you must confront threats before it's too late. Question, so the president doesn't take full responsibility? McClellan, the president already talked about the responsibility for decisions he's made. He talked about that with Prime Minister Blair. Thomas, personal responsibility? McClellan moved on to another reporter. Let me ask you this. Can you agree with me, Tom, that the president did tell us falsehoods regarding weapons of mass destruction with Iraq and that he should take full personal responsibility for taking us into war based on these falsehoods?
No, I don't think that specifically that President George W. Bush, I don't think that he brought us in under pretext of falsehoods. I think he had certain information and he went with what he had. I think, you know, part of the situation...
But the information was false.
Start,
I didn't say he lied. I said the information was false. We can agree that information was false, right?
Whether or not we'll find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, I think it's still up for debate, and I think that there's still a possibility that we can find some stuff.
Okay, but when the president said on March 17th, there is no question we have evidence and information that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical, that's false, wasn't it? When he said there's no question.
There's no doubt that that information was presented to him.
Okay, he was presented to the country false information. Now, maybe we can blame the lower downs. I know the buck never stopped with the president in this administration.
Well, the buck never stops at your wannabe future president, John Kerry, either.
You're changing the subject, but you agree that what he said to the country was false, and do you think he should take personal responsibility and say, look, I said something that was false to the nation, I'm sorry, we're investigating as to how we got that false information, and I take responsibility for giving this false information? Or do you think he should just say, I change the subject, as you're trying to do?
I think basically President Bush at the right time will give a full accounting for all his actions, and the American public will be able to have a referendum on whether or not what has been done in Iraq has been appropriate or been good for America or for our national defense, or if Saddam Hussein being kicked out is good. And that's called the November election, November 2nd.
Well, on that we agree, Tom, as we're closing up here. On that we absolutely agree that it will be up to the public to decide whether Bush should be taking responsibility for the falsehoods that he told the nation.
I think the best quote on this, as far as, you know, the future, your future Commander-in-Chief, Senator Kerry, is a quote by Senator Joe Lieberman. He said, I thought that John Kerry's statement in his announcement address that he voted for the resolution just to threaten Saddam Hussein was, quote, unbelievable. It was clearly an authorization for President Bush to use force against Saddam. We also don't need a waffler in charge of our country's future. I agree with Senator Joe Lieberman. We don't need a waffler. We need President George Bush.
Well, I couldn't disagree more. When you have a president who's coming to the Congress and not saying, I want to go to war, that's not what he said. It's not what he said. He said, I want authorization to have the right to go to war so that I can insist that Saddam Hussein accept those UN inspectors to put pressure on him. I think Congress has a right to take the president at his word and to say, all right, you have that authorization, but we expect you to use it reasonably. And this president didn't use it reasonably. It's quite one thing. Remember, the Democrats said we should have another authorization to go to war. The president said no. He said, nope, you have to give me this authorization.